Mate, you're a weird, lonely loser and no one wants to be around you. Nathan got in a punch that time, a hard one, and they rolled again, colliding with something. Nathan felt the tremble at the same time as a gasp came from the doorway. The Christmas tree tilted, then fell in a shimmering jangle of decorations and plastic pine needles and tinsel. It caught the corner of Cameron's painting as it fell, sending the frame rocking at an alarming angle on its twine.
Oh, shit!
Bub said. His voice nearly drowned out as Liz shrieked and darted across the room. Harry got there first, smacking the frame hard against the wall as he caught the picture just in time.
Christ, he said, that was close.
Liz was already at his side, running both hands over the frame as she checked for damage. Nathan could see her shoulders move as she breathed heavily and could tell she was trying not to cry. Finally, she straightened the painting against the wall.
Jesus, of all days,
Harry was shouting.
You realise your brother's gone, don't you? You can't respect his memory for 5 bloody minutes.
Sorry. Nathan pushed Bub off him and stood up. He reached out for the painting. Is it all right? Harry slapped his arm away.
Don't you bloody touch it.
Hey, I was just trying to...
Well, don't! You've done enough damage.
Stop it! Liz turned, tears in her eyes now. She looked from Nathan to Bub, who was still sprawled on the floor, shimmering gently with a dusting of loose tinsel particles.
Isn't today already bad enough for you two? She said.
What's wrong with you both?
Not enough misery here. You have to turn on each other as well.
Sorry, Mum,
Nathan said. She didn't answer. She was wiping her eyes. I'm sorry. He tried again. He ignored Bub, who was clamouring to his feet.
I'll fix it.
Liz took a breath.
I don't want you to fix anything. I have had it up to here, Nathan. I don't want to see you, either of you, again tonight.
But, Nathan, Bub, please,
just go away and leave me alone.
She turned back to the painting and didn't move again as her sons left the room. Chapter 33. It was dark as Nathan sat on the porch playing Sophie's guitar. He didn't know where Bub had gone, and he didn't care. Xander was crashed out asleep on the top of his bed when Nathan had checked on him. A light was still on in the backpacker's caravan. Nathan watched the shadows flicker in the windows as he sat on the steps and messed around with some chords. That's nice. He looked up, his fingers stopped on the strings. Thanks. Ilsa was holding 2 beers. Can I sit down? Course. He paused. Always. She put 1 bottle next to him. Condensation had already started to form as she clinked it with her own and sat down opposite.
Merry Christmas, I suppose.
Yeah, you too. Ilsa leaned against the veranda post and tilted her head back, watching him. She'd had a shower and swapped her dark dress for shorts and a shirt. Her hair was wet and shone dark and sleek in the porch light. Nathan had changed back into his jeans earlier and immediately felt dusty and gritty. I didn't mean to put you off. She nodded at the guitar. Don't stop. He drew a blank, scrabbling around for something to play. In the end, he settled on an old bush song his mum had used to sing when they were kids. It reminded him of Cameron when they were young. Playing cricket in the midday sun until Liz had yelled at them to get into the shade. It reminded him of the Cameron that he used to know a long time ago. Ilsa stretched her legs out along the step, her feet bare against the wood. She took a sip of her beer. How you feeling? He said.
It's been a terrible day, but now it's over, I feel,
she considered.
A bit better, I think.
How about you? Yeah, Nathan said, realizing it was true. Me too. Are the girls asleep? In your mum's room. Everyone's having an early night. Yeah, right. They sat as he played softly. She did seem better, he thought, in a way he couldn't quite put his finger on. There was a lightness in her face that hadn't been there before. Ilse was looking at the bruise forming around his eye. So, you spoke to Bub after all? Oh. He touched it. It hurt quite a bit, actually. He kind of spoke to me. Did you sort things out? Not really. I'll catch him tomorrow. Well, it is Christmas. He might be more willing to make up. I suppose. Either way, my dog's still dead. I know. She stretched out and touched his boot gently with her toes. But that'll still be the case whether you forgive your brother or not. Yeah, maybe. Definitely, I think, Nathan. Unfortunately, she said. And he felt himself smile. Ilse settled a little on the step and the wood creaked. How much longer are you here for? Until the day after tomorrow. Xander's getting the plane on the 27th. Before you go home, we'll have to talk over what to do about this place. With Bub, of course. Of course. She leaned back, her eyes half closed. Not now, though. No, he said. We don't have to do it now. Now I'm going to sit here and listen to the music. Sounds good. The light flicked off in the backpacker's caravan and they both looked over. It was pitch black out there now. Above, Nathan could make out the evening stars. So they're thinking about leaving, Ilse said. Yeah, well, Katie anyway. But listen. He hesitated. He didn't really want to have this conversation, not now. I was talking to her. I think she's pregnant, Ilse said suddenly. She seems it. Nathan stared at her, then nodded. A long silence as Ilse stared out into the night. Is it someone's other than Simon's? Apparently so. Ah. The word was like an exhalation, and Ilse's face twisted. She might have suspected, but Nathan could tell she hadn't known for sure. I don't think she's planning to keep it, he said, if that makes a difference. But that's why Cam made those calls to St. Helens. That's what it was about? I think so. Ilse stared at the darkened caravan for a long time. I'm pretty sure she's not even the first, she said eventually. Really? I don't mean the pregnancy, although... She shook her head. What do I know? But do you remember Magda? Nathan did, actually. A gentle Polish girl with a soft accent who had been there one Christmas a few years ago. Not long after he'd heard she'd gone, 2 months before her contract was up. And there was a girl over here from Perth, I think her, maybe, for a while. Maybe others. Cam was... Nathan struggled to put it into words. Not good enough. In a lot of ways. Ilse had a look on her face he couldn't quite read. She twisted the beer bottle in her hands, her fingertips leaving streaks in the condensation. Is that what the card with your present was about? Katie, he said. Forgive me. I'm honestly not sure. Maybe. She examined her hands. Maybe not. With Cameron, it could have been a few things. Yeah, I'm starting to realize that. The dark felt thick and heavy. I spoke to Steve earlier. About Jenna. Oh, yes? Ilse's eyes flicked to him. He said... He told me the same as you. She leaned back, disappointed. So nothing definite? No physical evidence, he told me. I don't know. It sounded pretty definite to me. Did it? I thought so. Especially in hindsight, for whatever that's worth. I should have... I don't know, at the time, Nathan was quiet. But Cam's my brother. I believed him. I know. Her eyes were on him. What do you think now? He looked up. The night sky was huge. I think Cameron Forster. I do too. They looked at each other for a long time. Nathan had finally opened his mouth to say something when he heard footsteps on the other side of the yard. Sounds like Harry doing the generator. Do you want to get inside before the lights go out? Ilse took a sip of beer, not quite looking at him now. Do you? No. Her eyes turned back to him just before the familiar electrical thump plunged them into darkness. The generator fell silent, and there was a sound of Harry climbing the stairs to his own cabin. Nathan put the guitar down. He could hear nothing now but the distant rush of wind and Ilse breathing. Against the inky night sky, he watched as her shadow tilted its head back and looked up at the stars. I was trying to leave him. Nathan felt something stirred deep inside him. Were you? I've been planning it for a while. Leave with Sophie and Lo. It's not that easy around here, though, practically. I mean, you can't just pick up and go. I mean, you can physically, but... She waved a hand at the hundreds of kilometres of space all around them. Go where? To me, Nathan wanted to say. You could have come to me. He stopped himself. Were you leaving because of Katie and the others? No, actually. Although that obviously didn't help. There were other reasons. She was quiet for a long time. It's hard being married to someone who really doesn't love you. Nathan thought of Jackie and felt a sudden flash of sympathy for her. Their marriage hadn't been easy on him, but it hadn't been easy on her either. He looked at Ilse. I'm sorry you were unhappy. She gave a small laugh, and he saw her take another sip from her bottle. That's not your fault, Nathan. I just wish... She stopped. What? They sat across from each other in the dark, the constellations brilliant above, their drinks warming in the air, the guitar lying on the step. I honestly didn't know Cameron was your brother when he first started talking to me, she said finally. Ilse, it's okay, it doesn't matter now. Now listen to me. I could have guessed, though. It wasn't hard to work out, but I was all by myself in this strange town. I didn't have any friends. I don't know exactly what I was hoping for with you, but when you disappeared... She paused, and Nathan felt a familiar, painful twist at the sheer missed opportunity. Ilse sighed. I was feeling sorry for myself, and suddenly Cameron was there. And he was good-looking and so charming. She said the word like it was a fault. He laughed at my jokes. I was flattered, I suppose. I'd never had anyone like him interested in me. And I was so young and stupid. Yeah, well, Nathan said, I know what that's like. I wasn't even that young when I stuffed everything up, so I've got no excuse. He saw the flash of a smile in the dark, quick but real. The step creaked gently. He didn't see her move, but all of a sudden she felt a little closer. Cameron said he loved me. And then I was pregnant, and then we were married, and then 10 years later, here I am. It's just... Sometimes I stand on this veranda and I look out and I wonder... Her voice was soft. How things might have turned out if I hadn't been quite so young and dumb. If I'd only done one or two things differently. I wonder that all the time. Do you? Every day? Her hand was inches from his own in the dark. He could feel the ends of his fingertips tingle against the dusty porch. Ilse, he said her name softly. The step creaked again, definitely a little closer. Her clean, damp hair smelled like the ocean. Ilse, I wanted to say, Nathan. Her voice was quiet. It's honestly okay. No, please. It's okay, truly. I'm so sorry. I know. Her fingertips brushed his. I tried to come back to see you more than once. I was ashamed of what I'd done, and I was worried what you'd say, but I should have tried harder. I really wanted to talk to you. The words were tumbling out, falling over each other, in relief at being finally spoken. I regret that more than... You don't have to. I do, though. I'm sorry that I didn't tell you that when I could have, and if I hurt you. Her eyes were bright in the darkness, and he could feel the warmth of her fingertips against his. I'm sorry about so much. Everything, really. And I'm sorry for me, for having it all in front of me and letting you go like that, for missing my chance. Her voice was close. That was all a long time ago. I know. But I've been wanting to tell you that ever since. You've been waiting 10 years to tell me that? Yes. Nathan. He could feel her breath soft on his lips. What are you waiting for now? He leaned in. Chapter 34. They broke apart for air, half standing, half stumbling up the darkened steps with her skin warm against his, and Nathan felt Ilse pull him towards the sleeping house. His hand was tight in hers and his mind leaped and bounded ahead, up the steps, past his sleeping bag on the couch into her room, Cameron's room, and he felt her hesitate at the same time. Wait, not there, he said into her hair. Where then? She whispered. This way. He took her by the hand, moving as fast as the dark would let him around the side of the house and towards the driveway, and suddenly, it was 10 years ago, and he was pressing her up against the side of his four-wheel drive, and he could feel her mouth hot and sweet on his and her hands fumbling at his waistband. He threw open the rear door of the car, shoving equipment and supplies aside as he dragged a blanket onto the floor. The suspension creaked as they stretched out, and he could hear their breath as the moon shone through the windows. She reached for him, and he could feel the weight of the years falling away. And for the first time in as long as he could remember, he could breathe properly. She was warm and steady, and suddenly it was all flooding back. The way he had felt that first night, lying close to her with the years laid out ahead of him and the choices still there to be made. And he felt as though in this moment, for once in his life, he was exactly where he should be, with his arms around her as the Christmas stars burned hot and bright in the night sky above them. It felt right. It felt like a second chance. Later in the dark blue pre-dawn of Christmas morning, they lay side by side. A warm breeze blew through the open car doors as they watched the giant sky move through its nightly rotation. Neither had spoken for a while. I don't believe Sophie heard her arm riding, Ilse whispered. Her eyes were still on the stars. Don't you? Cameron did it, I'm sure. They didn't look at each other. He scared himself. I could tell from his face. Nathan continued to stare at the sky. He was the only one out at the stables with Sophie when it happened. Ilse propped herself up on her elbow, facing him now. She can be lazy cleaning them out, and she hadn't done it properly. And Cam had been in this terrible mood all day, worse than usual. I didn't realize he was alone with her or I would have... She stopped. I don't know what. Anyway, I came into the house with Sophie crying her eyes out and Cameron with this story about her horse throwing her off. I suppose it could have happened, but she's a good little rider and when she falls, she knows what to do. It was Cameron who gave himself away, though, I could see it. He was scared by how far he'd gone. Nathan still said nothing, just looked out at the endless stars instead. "It's true," she said. "I promise." Slowly he reached out a hand and rested it on hers. "I believe you, I'm just..." He thought about his brothers and himself, and their dad and the years growing up under him, what they'd all become. Very sad. The sky was a whole shade lighter when they spoke again. He ran his thumb along her forearm, stopping at a deep purple bruise near her elbow. "That wasn't him," Ilse said. "That was from the calf the other day." He moved his thumb instead to the back of her hand where there was an old burn mark shaped like the tip of an iron. They looked at each other for a long time, then, in the dusky half-light, she nodded. She twisted gently and showed him a shoulder and another scar, older and differently shaped. She twisted again and again. Secrets written on patches of skin. Nathan pictured the large bottle of paracetamol on her bedside table. "I'm sorry. He didn't do it all the time. Not every day. Nothing like that. Sometimes months could go by. Sometimes he wasn't..." "What?" "As bad," Nathan made himself ask. "Did anyone else notice?" "I don't think so."
"Really?"
She looked at him. "Did you?" The impulse to ignore the question was so strong, it was an almost physical reaction. But he made himself lie there and look at her. He thought about leaving rooms as she entered, avoiding anything but the most superficial conversation. Looking at her only through the veil of his own suffocating self-pity and regret. Finally, he shook his head. "No," he said honestly, "I didn't." "You're not alone. I did wonder if maybe Harry suspected, but there's so much to do here, so he's always so busy." "Bub," she shrugged. Cam bullied him as well in his own way. I don't think Bub even realized it anymore. He's so used to being pushed around, he thinks it's completely normal. "What about Mum?" Ilse's face hardened. "What?" he said. "I tried to talk to her once. It didn't go well." "What did she say?" "Nothing at first. She seemed to think I was talking about typical marriage spats. I don't know if she honestly didn't get it or if she deliberately wouldn't. So I tried again. And that time..." Ilse stopped. "That time she got annoyed. Told me this property was hard enough to run and I should be supporting Cameron, not picking fights. I was scared she would tell him what I'd said, and that would have made it so much worse. I never brought it up again." Nathan was quiet again, for longer this time as his mind ran back through the years, remembering all sorts of things. Finally, he took a breath. "Our dad..." He started, then stopped, not sure how to go on. Ilse waited. "I know," she said when he didn't continue. "Cameron told me how bad he was." "Did he?" Nathan was genuinely surprised. He'd never told anyone. Not Jackie, not Xander, not Barb, not Cameron. He and his brothers had never talked about it, not once in their whole adult lives. "Cameron thought he could be different," Ilse said. "I do think he wanted to be a good dad and a good husband. And he could be great, he really could, but then he would turn. It could be over nothing, he became someone else. For a long time I was worried about him, and then one day I woke up and realized I was scared of him." Nathan looked at her. "The funny thing is, I think he knew it before I did." She shook her head. "I was already too late. He'd chipped away at everything over the years. I have nothing of my own out here. Our bank account isn't even in my name. Did you know that? He checked all the statements, had to approve every transaction." She glanced in the direction of the garages. "Did you find anything wrong with my car?" "No, nothing. I think Cameron used to sabotage it." "Seriously?" Not often, but getting stuck out there once or twice was enough. He knew how to do it too, so I'd get a few kilometres before it would drop out. Like last year, I was stuck for nearly 5 hours, waiting for him to come and drag me home like an animal. I couldn't trust the car, and if I couldn't trust it, he knew I couldn't drive it, and I couldn't take the girls away in it. Ilse lay back again. The stars were growing fainter now. "Not that we'd get far anyway," she said. "My passport has expired. Neither of the girls even has one." He'd taken my driving license and residency documents, in theory, to file away, but when I wanted them, I couldn't find them. "I haven't had a paid job since I worked in the pub. I don't have any family in this country, no real friends, and people around here liked Cameron. If they had to choose a side, it wouldn't be mine." Ilse turned her head. "Just ask Jenna Moore." "What about Glenn? He's a good bloke. He could have protected you." "How?" Ilse's gaze was serious, and Nathan realised she was really asking. "How is he going to protect me from my husband in the next room? He's 3 hours away in the police station on a good day. Do you know what an angry person can do in 3 hours?" Nathan said nothing. He did, actually. "There are accidents just waiting to happen around here," she said. "Maybe next time it's me who falls from my horse, but instead of breaking my arm, I break my neck, or I get my hand ripped off in machinery, or get backed over by one of the cars, or Sophie does, or Lo." Nathan thought about that, then had to stop thinking about it. "Things have been getting worse these last few months," Ilse went on, "since he found out that Jenna called in hindsight. I'd made an emergency plan in case I had to leave in a hurry. I started collecting cash, anything small I could get my hands on. I put aside some things for the girls, clothes and toys. Not enough that Cameron would notice, but then Lo made a fuss and I had to put most of them back. So I concentrated on trying to find some of the most important documents. The girls' birth certificates, my proof of residency, things like that. When I had a few things together, I'd drive out and hide them." Nathan pictured her kneeling under the blazing sun by the headstone at the stockman's grave, turning the soil. "You hid them at the grave?" "It's on the way to town, but far enough away from here that I felt a bit safer. If Cameron had found out..." She stopped. "Anyway, I wrapped everything in a plastic envelope and buried it." "So what happened?" "Cameron hurt Sophie. That was the final straw, or I thought it was at least. I'd always told myself it was one thing when it was between me and him, but when it came to the girls..." She sat up. "The next morning I put Sophie and Lo in the workers' car. I didn't tell anyone we were going, didn't pack anything. But reality sank in on the way. I hadn't saved nearly enough money. The fuel alone to get anywhere from here is bad enough, and I'd have to pay for accommodation, food, clothes for the girls to replace what we'd left, legal fees maybe. I didn't have anything like enough for long-term survival." She looked out at the far horizon, visible now against the encroaching dawn. "So you came back." "It was terrible. I hated myself for it. I just stood beside that stupid grave. I didn't even bother to dig up the envelope in the end. I put the girls back in the car. It was the longest drive of my life. The girls were confused. I couldn't think what to tell them." She shook her head. "After that, I started grabbing whatever I needed as fast as I could." She shook her head. "Cameron noticed, I'm sure of it. He was always around. I couldn't get out of his sight. Harry had to practically order him to go and fix that mast on Lehman's Hill. Cam had been putting it off so long. On that last morning when Cam pulled over on the driveway before he left..." She frowned, remembering. "He was tense, but something was going to happen. I asked him if he was going to the mast with Bub, and he said he was. But he looked at me in this strange way, and I knew he was lying." She lay back down. He'd been looking through Lowe's sketchbook the night before. I think he saw that painting again, the one of me and the girls at the grave, and put two and two together. When I heard he'd been found dead out there, I kept waiting for someone to ask me about the envelope. Nathan pictured Cameron's body under the tarp and the shallow hole in the ground. He didn't have anything when he was found. Certainly not a plastic envelope full of cash and documents. I know. I thought it must still be buried there. I was scared someone would stumble across it. I didn't want anyone to think that I... What? Had anything to do with what happened to him. The faint tan lines and freckles on his skin were visible in the early morning glow. The sky was almost fully light now. The household would be waking up. The day before yesterday was the first chance I had. I went out there and dug. Same spot as always. Nathan remembered her kneeling at the grave, bent over in the sun, the small movement in her shoulders. So you got it back? Ilse shook her head. No. That's just it. The envelope wasn't there anymore. Nathan stared at her. Are you sure? Completely. But if it's not there and it wasn't with Cameron, he said, then where is it? The shadows of the dawn light stretched across her face. I don't know. Chapter 35. Nathan stared at Cameron's painting. The house was still quiet, but only just. He and Ilse had stayed tangled in the blanket in the back of his car as long as they could, whispering as the sky grew lighter. Finally, they'd had to prise themselves apart. It was Christmas morning. The girls would be on the move. Could have been a dingo, Nathan said, his voice low as he zipped up his jeans. Despite everything, he still felt a warm buzz when he looked at her. I know. Ilse ran a hand through her hair. That's what I wondered too. I'd always been a bit worried about that happening. A dingo could dig up that hole, couldn't it? Take the envelope? Yeah. Dropped it somewhere when it lost interest. It was probably under a pile of sand by now. And Bub said there were dingoes sniffing around. Oh, right. Well then. They both fell quiet at the same time. I know Bub was out there by himself for a bit, but... Nathan pictured the rumpled tarp and Bub's face after Cameron's body was moved. He was as surprised to see that hole as anyone. That didn't necessarily mean he couldn't have taken something from Cameron's pockets, though, Nathan thought. He didn't say that out loud. I feel like Bub would have said something to me by now if he'd found it, Ilse was whispering now as they approached the house, especially with him being so annoyed about the property. They hesitated at the foot of the veranda steps. Nathan took a breath. There's no way Jenna might... Realistically, she couldn't. They both started and stopped at the same time. Neither said anything. I really don't think, Nathan said. No. Ilse shook her head firmly. I don't either. I don't. They stood for a moment longer, just looking at each other, then turned to go inside. As he held open the screen door, she brushed his fingertips with her own as she passed. Thank you, Nathan, she said politely. You're welcome, Ilse. He could see her smiling to herself as she disappeared down the hall. Nathan sat now on the couch looking at Cameron's artwork. He could pinpoint the spot beneath the headstone where the earth had been dug up in real life. In the painting, that piece of ground was smooth and untouched. In the corner of the room, the Christmas tree shivered in a draft of air. Someone had put it back up since yesterday. The pounding of small footsteps filled the hallway and the girls piled into the room. They were holding presents under their arms and even Lo seemed interested for once. Liz followed, carrying a tray of coffee mugs. There was a sound of a toilet flushing along the hall and a minute later Bub appeared. He hovered at the edge, leaning against the door. He had a beer in his hand. What? It's Christmas. he said as Liz frowned. She turned to Nathan. Where's Xander? I'll get him. We're not waiting to start opening, Uncle Nathan. Sophie's voice floated behind him as he got up. I wouldn't dream of asking you to. Xander was fast asleep in bed, his hair dark against the pillow, and Nathan felt a pang of nostalgia. It had always been Xander who had woken him up on Christmas morning every second year. This could realistically be the last Christmas they would spend together, Nathan thought. And either way, his son would be fully grown up next time. The room felt a little bare, and Nathan realized Xander had already started packing a few things. He stared at his backpack and sighed.
What are you doing?
Nathan looked over to see Xander awake. Watching you sleep, my son and heir. Xander smiled.
That's weird.
Then you should have got up earlier. Happy Christmas.
You too.
Xander seemed in a better mood than yesterday, at least. He nodded at Nathan's bruise.
Your eye looks bad.
It's all right. Should see the other guy.
I did, last night. Bub was fine.
Xander was watching Nathan with a bemused look.
What's up with you anyway?
What do you mean?
I don't know, you seem sort of happier.
Oh, well, it's Christmas, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose.
There you go. The girls are opening their presents. Xander pulled himself up to sit against the pillow.
So we're really doing this? Christmas, like nothing has happened?
They're just kids, mate. You were excited at that age too. Nathan started towards the door. Get dressed and come through when you're ready.
Dad?
Xander took a breath.
I don't think Sophie heard her arm riding.
Nathan sat back down.
I was talking to her yesterday, and when I mentioned it, she seemed to kind of forget. Then she got this weird look on her face like she'd said something she wasn't supposed to.
The funeral had opened the floodgates, Nathan thought. With Cam safely in the ground, it seemed everyone felt more able to say what they couldn't when he was walking around. Nathan looked now at his son. He was nearly grown up in so many ways, not a child anymore. And there had already been too many secrets kept for too long in that house.
Cameron heard her, Nathan said. Ilsa told me last night.
Xander didn't reply for a long time.
Sophie's just a kid, he said finally. How could he do that?
I don't know, mate.
Do you think Cameron felt bad about it?
I hope so.
Maybe that explains why he left his car.
Yeah. Maybe it does.
Are the girls okay?
Nathan could hear voices down the hall and thought about Cameron buried outside. I think so, right now anyway.
Why don't you come and join in?
He stood up.
Dad?
Yeah?
Sorry about the past couple of days.
Xander threaded the bed cover between his fingers the way he used to when he was young.
I was just worried.
I know. I'm sorry too, Nathan said. And look, you're right. I've got an appointment with Steve, and I'll have a think, a proper one, about some changes. I can't promise I'm going to move away, mate.
Xander looked disappointed, but Nathan wanted to be honest. And it was true. He couldn't simply leave for lots of reasons. Financial, practical, and not least because sometimes, quite a lot of the time, he felt connected to the outback in a way that he loved. There was something about the brutal heat when the sun was high in the sky and he was watching the slow, meandering movement of the herds. Looking out over the wide-open plains and seeing the changing colours in the dust, it was the only time when he felt something close to happiness. If Xander couldn't feel it himself, and Nathan knew that not everyone could, then he couldn't explain it. It was harsh and unforgiving, but it felt like home. Things will be better, though, I promise. Nathan reached out and put his arms around his boy. Xander hugged him back. You can trust me. Yeah, I know. They pulled apart and Nathan left Xander to get up and dressed. Out in the hall, he could still hear chatter coming from the living room. It was a nice sound. He started towards it, then stopped at the sight of the landline phone. He glanced back at Xander's room. Then without thinking too hard about it, he walked over and dialed a number. It had been a while, and he got it wrong the first time. He tried again. Hello? The voice was both familiar and that of a stranger. Jackie. It's Nathan. There was a confused pause, then... Has something happened to Xander? No. He's fine. He heard her breathe out in relief. I wanted to talk to you, actually. Oh. Another pause. Okay. She sounded surprised, but not nearly as hostile as he remembered. She sounded different from the way she did in her emails or through a lawyer. Listen, Jackie. I wanted to tell you that I'm sorry for abandoning your dad. Whatever had happened between me and you, it was a terrible thing to do. And if I could go back and change it, I would. Oh. An even longer pause. Thank you. And I'm sorry I wasn't what you needed. For you or for Xander. He expected the silence this time and waited. You've always given Xander what he needed, Jackie said finally. He heard her take a breath. Sorry, Nathan. I have to ask, is it skin cancer? Have you had a bad result? What? No. Then what's brought this on? I just... He stopped. It felt like it was time. It was true, he realized. It was hard work staying angry for 10 years. Jackie sounded tired too. They spoke for a bit longer. It was awkward and rusty, but it was like an old piece of machinery. He could imagine it being functional once again. She sent her condolences about Cameron. Nathan gritted his teeth and asked politely after Martin. He was doing very well, apparently. His star continuing its ascendance in the field of metal-centric architecture. Nathan's gaze wandered as Jackie made awkward small talk about some renovation work they were planning for Xander's bedroom. His eyes landed on the key rack above the family logbook. Cameron's car keys hung from their lanyard, exactly where Nathan had put them himself a couple of days earlier. It was the silence on the other end of the phone that told him he'd missed something. Sorry, what was that? A small sigh of disappointment. That brought back a few memories, but he pushed them aside. I was saying thanks for understanding about Xander's exams and him needing to be at home more. Jackie paused. I know you miss him. Yeah. He misses you too. Does he? Of course, you're his dad. Nathan felt a flicker of warmth between them. And for a moment he could remember what he'd once loved about that golden-haired girl on the other side of the fence. Seeing Xander's the best part of my year. He's really great. You should be proud. Well, as should you, Nathan. Nathan heard movement and saw their son in the hallway. He waved him over. He's here now. I'll put him on. Happy Christmas, Jackie. Xander took the phone, mouth agape, in a way that made Nathan feel both a bit better and a bit guilty. He should have tried to do this years ago. As he turned away, his eye caught once more on the key rack and he reached out and unhooked Cameron's keys. He wandered down the hall, running the lanyard through his fingers. It still had a little red dust on it and he couldn't help picturing it, dumped on the front seat of Cam's car on that terrible day when they'd found him. Not dumped. A small voice whispered in his head, neatly coiled, in a way he had never seen from his brother. Nathan's thoughts were scattered by shrieks as Sophie and Lo careered out of the living room and ran past him. Ilsa followed with a smile and a rubbish bag full of torn wrapping paper. Nathan slipped the keys into his pocket and smiled back. Liz came out, looking better than she had the day before, Nathan was relieved to see. She headed towards the kitchen and squeezed his arm as she passed. She seemed to have forgiven him, at least. "I'd better get lunch on. I've given the backpackers the day off, so feel free to help." She turned and called out, "Sophie!"
"Yeah?"
A voice shouted back, "Can you please run out and tell Simon and Katie that lunch is at 12?
"Okay."
More pounding of feet. Sophie appeared and drew to a brief halt.
"Can I whip the cream for the Pav?"
"No, I want to,"
Lo shouted. "You both can." Liz rolled her eyes. "We're not there yet anyway." She headed into the kitchen as Sophie ran outside. There was a silence, then the veranda boards rumbled again. Sophie reappeared at the door and Nathan could see by her face that something was wrong.
"It's gone."
She sounded confused. Harry appeared at Nathan's shoulder.
"What has?"
he said. "The backpacker's car."
"They've gone."
"The caravan's still there, but their car is gone." Harry frowned, and Nathan followed him outside. Sure enough, the backpacker's battered car, their own private vehicle that they'd driven into town, was no longer there. It had been parked last night and every night before right next to the caravan. Now, there was just an empty patch of ground in its place. Sophie ran up to it and spread her arms wide.
"See?" she shouted. "I told you."
The caravan door opened, and Simon poked his head out, surprised to see Nathan and Harry and the girls staring at him. Over his shoulder, Nathan saw Ilsa and Bub wander out onto the veranda to see what the fuss was about. Simon blinked in the sunlight. He looked like he'd just woken up.
"Is Katie already in the house?"
he said. It took him another moment to realise what they were all looking at. His eyes widened, any last traces of sleep gone.
"Where's the bloody car?"
He ran out, hitching up his shorts. He stood on the bare patch of land and circled around one way and then the other. The car did not reappear.
"Where were the keys, mate?"
Harry said. Simon stopped turning and dashed back into the caravan. He re-emerged looking, if possible, even more perplexed.
"They were right there in the cupboard, but now they're gone."
He ran down to the empty space again.
"And no sign of Katie in there with you?"
Harry said quickly before Simon could start circling once more.
"No, she's gone too. And her bag."
Simon stopped dead still and stared at them.
"Wait. Casey took my car?"
"I would say, mate, that's the way it's looking."
"But why?"
Simon's eyes widened. Then with a speed that surprised Nathan, his expression darkened.
"It was my car. How could she do this to me?"
Nathan cleared his throat. "She did mention she was quite keen to head off," he said neutrally.
"So what? She just gets to make the decisions, does she?"
Simon's eyes flashed, and he paced up and down the empty space.
"Shit! Shit! I can't believe this!"
"Did you not hear her leave?"
Harry said. He looked mildly entertained.
"I take sleeping tablets at night," Simon snapped back. "I've been very stressed lately. Shit!"
More pacing.
"No one else heard her go?"
Nathan resisted the urge to glance around at Ilsa. Now Simon mentioned it, he had vaguely registered the faint thrum of an engine at one point. He'd been dozing and dreamed it was the generator. By the time he'd opened his eyes, he'd looked at Ilsa sleeping next to him and instantly forgotten all about it. He watched Simon pacing and mumble something that sounded suspiciously like "stupid bitch" and felt a certain warm glow at the idea of Katie buggering off under the cover of darkness. She deserved better, all things considered, but it was a start.
"How am I supposed to get out of this shithole without a car?"
Simon was shouting now. His tone was bordering on screechy. Nathan heard Bub on the veranda failing to suppress a laugh. Harry caught Nathan's eye. A flicker of a smile caused his craggy features to move a fraction.
I can tow you into town tomorrow, mate, Harry said, not unkindly. And then bloody what? Simon snapped.
I don't know, mate. I reckon you'll be able to work something out from there, though.
Simon took one more look at them, one more look at the empty space, then turned and stomped back into the empty caravan where his girlfriend used to be and slammed the door, hard. Nathan could still hear Bub laughing as he disappeared with Ilsa and the girls back into the house. He and Harry exchanged an amused glance.
On that note,
Harry started towards the house.
You coming back in?
Nathan felt Cameron's car keys weighing down his pocket. Harry. He felt his smile dim. There was nothing wrong with Ilsa's car. Harry turned at that.
No?
She reckons Cam was messing around with it so it was too unreliable to use. Nathan watched his face. Is that what you'd thought? Harry said nothing for a moment, then nodded.
Yeah, I wondered. Eventually. There's not a lot that stumps me on those vehicles, but that bloody car.
He shook his head. She reckons he was doing other things as well.
Like what?
Harry said.
Things like Dad, Nathan said.
He waited. You don't look surprised.
It's not that.
Harry glanced towards the house.
Look, Cameron was a smart bloke. A lot smarter than Carl, but you know that. Carl was a violent, aggressive bastard and didn't care who knew it, but Cam was never like that. He wanted people to like him and respect him. And they did, didn't they? Underneath, though.
Harry said nothing for so long that Nathan thought he might not continue.
I'd started to wonder if Cam was more like your dad than he let on. Maybe worse even, because he was clever. He could hide it better.
You never saw him do anything?
No, but I felt like I'd seen some of the signs before. Lowe's bloody sad drawings. Sophie's arm sounded like bullshit to me as well, but she swore that was what happened. Jesus, Harry, you should have done something. Hey.
Harry pointed a calloused finger at Nathan.
You haven't shown your face here in a year, mate. Don't tell me what I should or shouldn't have been doing. I kept that key to the rifle cabinet close in case he started getting any ideas. I sent Cam away from here on any job I could think of. I tried to talk to him. When that didn't work, I argued with him like your bloody backpacker mate overheard. You could have called the police. So could you,
Harry said suddenly. He stared at Nathan with a clear gaze.
All those times with your dad and you and your brothers and your mum, you were all old enough to pick up the phone and call someone. Why didn't you?
Nathan opened his mouth, then shut it. I don't know, he said finally. He did, though, he realised. He hadn't called anyone for help because it simply hadn't occurred to him that he could. He knew the unspoken rules. Don't tell anyone. Not even each other. And even if he'd thought to ask for help, there had seemed no point asking for something that simply wasn't there. Nathan may not know much, but in his heart he had always held on to a single ingrained truth. Out there, he was on his own.
I did call the police once, Harry said, his features again inscrutable. When things got bad between your mum and dad.
You and Cam were away at boarding school, but ask Bub, I guarantee you he'll remember it. Afterwards, your mum made me promise never to do it again. Caused a lot of problems that a visit from the sergeant didn't stop and didn't turn out well.
For mum?
For Bub. They both stared out across the yard at the graves for a long while.
I know Bub can be hard work when he wants to be,
Harry said. But he did it even worse than you and Cam growing up. Just bear that in mind, all right? You and Cam weren't the only ones who had a bad time. Nathan was quiet for a minute.
Yeah, I know.
Harry was looking back at the house now and Nathan followed his gaze, catching a glimpse of Liz in the kitchen window. She was smiling and looking down, probably talking to one of the girls. As Harry looked on, His features relaxed, and for once his eyes were as open and unguarded as Nathan had ever seen them. Nathan looked at Harry looking at his mother, and suddenly wondered for the first time if there was something other than the land and lifestyle that had made Harry want to stay on the property for so many years. Then Liz moved away from the window, and the shutters behind Harry's eyes snapped closed so fast Nathan thought he might have imagined it. The gum tree bristled in the hot air, and they both turned back towards the graves. "I spoke to Steve at the funeral," Nathan said. "He thinks Cameron did attack Jenna that night." Harry just nodded. Nathan felt the car keys in his pocket, sharp and jagged. What do you think she wanted to say to him when she called?
Don't know. Could have been anything.
But do you think...
Look, I'll tell you what I think, mate.
Harry cut him short.
Sometimes, whether by accident or whatever, I reckon sometimes things turn out for the best. And when you end up in the right place, not always helpful to go digging up the road that got you there, you know?
His eyes flicked over to the graves one last time as the wind lifted dust all around them.
Now.
Harry turned firmly back to the house.
You coming in to join everyone?
The metal of the keys bit into Nathan's skin. Ilse's envelope had been taken by a dingo. Jenna Moore was not around. The lanyard, uncoiled now, was still gritty in his fingers. Cameron's car stood lonely on the driveway. Nathan shook his head. Not just yet. Chapter 36. Cameron's Land Cruiser was still parked when Nathan and Xander had left it all those days ago. Duffy followed at Nathan's heels, excited to be in the familiar car once again as they climbed in. Nathan sat in the driver's seat, feeling where the contours had worn exactly to his brother's frame. It was the right distance from the pedals now. He fished the keys out of his pocket. The engine started immediately, as it had every other time. No car trouble for Cameron, Nathan thought with a sour note as he pictured Ilse's neglected vehicle. He waited until the air conditioner was running nice and high, then got out and started at the back while the dog watched. Nathan pulled out the bottles of water, the tin food, the cooler. He took out the first aid kit and then removed the contents, checking the edges of the bag for anything envelope-shaped. He unhooked the spare tyres and felt around the inside rims. The car had already been searched twice by the police. But Nathan thought as he worked through methodically, they hadn't known then what they were looking for. He ran his hands over the floor mats, feeling in the cracks for anything slipped between. He checked the fabric of the roof and the car seats for any hidden seams. He went through the toolkit, then slid down on the ground and examined the underneath of the chassis with a torch. He opened the bonnet and checked for anything taped to the sides or underneath. An hour later, he was down to opening the packets of food and peering inside the water bottles. After another 30 minutes, he opened one of Cam's beers, climbed into the front seat, and let the air conditioner blow in his face as he fed Duffy biscuits from Cameron's stash. Nathan looked at the mess around him. Nothing. If an envelope had ever been dug up from the stockman's grave and dumped in this car, it was beyond him to find it. And if anyone other than Cameron had been in the vehicle at that time, they hadn't revealed themselves to Nathan. Maybe. Nathan took a sip of beer and grimaced. It was as hot as coffee. Maybe there never was anything to be found. He was still sitting there, sipping and thinking, when he heard footsteps and a figure appeared through the dusty windscreen. Bub.
I heard the engine.
Bub climbed into the passenger seat.
Been looking for you.
Have you? Nathan offered him one of the five remaining cans in their brother's six-pack.
twist my arm.
Bub took one, his gaze flicking over the car.
What are you doing in here?
I honestly don't know.
Right. Anyway.
He cracked open the warm beer and barely winced as he took a sip.
Mate, listen, I wanted to say sorry.
Nathan looked over in surprise. Oh, yeah?
About Kelly. I know it was my fault, but I promise you it was an accident. You have to believe me. I seriously never meant for that to happen. Kelly was an awesome dog. I was gutted when I heard that she died. I'd never have done that to her on purpose.
I know, Nathan said, and meant it. Bub looked down at the can in his hand.
I felt bloody awful. I shouldn't have been baiting, but I didn't know you'd be in that area. I thought I'd pick them all up. When I heard about Kelly, I wanted to explain, but Cam said he'd do it. Make it all right. He told me he'd talk to you and that you were pissed off, but he said you knew it was an accident, and with you being so, you know...
Bub tapped his head.
It was best to let you get over it and not bring it up.
Nathan took a long, warm sip from his can. He never spoke to me.
No. Well, yeah, I'd started to wonder. Then when you said all that yesterday, I just panicked. I'm sorry, mate, I didn't know what to tell you. It was a shit thing to do and I've felt shit about it ever since. I should have come to talk to you instead of trusting bloody Cam.
Ilsa was right, Nathan thought. Whether or not he forgave his brother, it wouldn't bring Kelly back. Thanks for telling me, bub. Nathan sighed.
Listen, though. It's me who should be sorry. I should have said this years ago, but I'm really sorry, mate, for not doing a lot more to help you with Dad. Nah, Christ, Nathan, it's not your fault. You tried. Cam as well, to be fair.
Still, we should have...
What? What could anyone do with a bloke like him?
Bub looked over.
Anyway, it was as bad for you.
It wasn't, though. Not really, Nathan said. Me and Cam always had each other. They sat and drank and stared out together through the windscreen for a while. It was so dusty by now that it was hard to see through.
I don't like living here,
Bub said eventually.
Reminds me too much of some stuff. That's why I was baiting those dingoes. Trying to get some money to go to Dulsterville after Cam wouldn't help. That's why I've been such an asshole about this place as well.
He sighed.
Nothing personal, mate, but the thought of staying here and answering to another one of my bloody brothers for the next 10 years does my head in. I just need to be somewhere else.
Roo shooting in Dulsterville, eh?
Yep.
Bub had a faraway look in his eye.
It'd be so great there. Get my own place, meet some people. There's chicks living in Dulsterville, you know, heaps more than here.
Yeah. Nathan gave Bub a small smile. I've heard.
And then when Cam died, I thought that was my chance. If I couldn't leave, then maybe running this place wouldn't be so bad. Could make some changes, but then...
Bub broke the ring pull off his can.
It was bloody obvious that no one thought I could do it. They're all flat out hoping you're going to come back and help Ilsa. And it pissed me off.
Nathan frowned. I don't think that's what they want. Ilsa will get a manager or someone.
Mate, Bub said, that's exactly what they want. I've heard Harry say it and Mum. Ilsa as well, I reckon. They're waiting for you to say you're interested.
Seriously, no one's mentioned it.
I know, because they're all shitting themselves about putting too much pressure on you after, you know, what happened to Cam. And the fact you can be a bit...
What?
Like I said...
Bub tapped his head. I'm not. Nathan suddenly felt very aware of the ransacked car. Not always. Anyway, I can barely run my own property.
Yeah, because it's complete shit. No one could make money running that place. Harry says that all the time. Even Cam used to say that. You're doing well to have kept going as long as you have.
Nathan said nothing for a long time. He reached over and opened another beer. It was a little cooler this time thanks to the aircon, slightly above room temperature. What about you? He said finally.
Nate, I don't want to run things. Too much paperwork. Don't get me wrong, I wouldn't have minded being asked. That would have been the bloody polite thing to do. But never mind. I just want to free up some cash and go to Dulsterville.
Roos and chicks, eh?
Exactly, mate. Exactly.
Nathan smiled. Well, it's good to have a dream.
Yeah. So you'll talk to Ilse for me? See if she'll buy me out, at least partly?
You could talk to her. She wants to know what you think.
Yeah, I know. But when I walked past the living room at about 3 this morning, it looked to me like that sleeping bag of yours wasn't getting much use.
Bub shot Nathan a sideways glance and grinned.
So I reckon it's fair to say you know how to talk to Ilse better than me.
Nathan suppressed a smile and said nothing. Oh, hey, Bub went on.
Maybe you could buy me out. Slowly would be okay. I don't need that much at first. If you ever get off your ass and work out what you want.
Nathan looked through the dusty windscreen. He could barely make out what lay ahead.
Yeah, he said. Maybe.
Look, either way, we'll work something out for you. That's great. Thanks, mate.
Bub glanced over.
Sorry about your face too, by the way.
Don't worry about it. You all right?
Yeah. Bub laughed. You didn't even graze me. I was pretty hammered.
Good to know.
So are we okay?
Yeah. We're okay.
Awesome. Thanks, mate.
Bub opened the door to get out.
I'm heading back in. You all done here?
Nathan looked around at the interior of the car. There was nothing to be found.
Yeah.
He opened the door. I'm done.
Chapter 37.
I can't get it.
It's like this. Nathan repositioned Sophie's hand on the neck of the guitar and moved one of her fingers on the string. She tried again and the chord rang out a little disharmonious still, but closer. Sophie's sling lay by her side on the veranda step. Steve had given her permission to take it off for a couple of hours a day, she'd said, and she was making the most of it. Nathan shifted, the late morning sun warm on his back, and adjusted her hand on the strings once more. Try again.
Yeah, better that time.
He saw Lo grimace at the sound, but she said nothing, just concentrated on her painting. From the aroma floating from the kitchen, the lunch preparation was coming along well, and Nathan could hear Liz rattling pots and pans inside. He and Bub had gone in to help, only to be shooed out by an exasperated Liz 20 minutes later for getting underfoot. Bub had been happy enough. He'd got a new cricket bat for Christmas and had roped Harry into bowling for him around the front of the house. Nathan couldn't see them from where he sat, but he could hear the occasional thwack and cheer. The screen door slammed and Xander appeared. He was holding a folded piece of paper as he sat down next to Nathan.
Sounding good, Sophie?
Thanks.
She smiled, focusing on the strings. It wasn't only the absence of her sling. It was like a cloud had lifted after the funeral. Here. Xander handed the sheet of paper to Nathan. It's not exactly a Christmas present, but I wanted to give you this.
What is it?
Nathan unfolded it. Inside was a handwritten list of dates. So these are the term dates and the exam weeks for this year, Xander pointed. And here are all the potential holidays, here and here. Here too. So we can plan something.
Oh.
The writing blurred a tiny bit as Nathan looked at it.
Thanks, mate.
But
seriously, you should stay in Brisbane, focus on your work if you need to. He smiled. Who knows? If your marks are good enough, you might be able to follow Martin into the world of blinding metallic buildings. Yeah, I'm not going to be doing that. Xander grinned back. But look, I probably will have to stay home most of the time. So that's why you should come and visit me in Brisbane. Nathan hesitated. It was Mum's idea, Xander said, reading his mind. Really? Yeah. Maybe I could ask her if you could stay with us. Martin built a guest house in the garden.
Really?
Well, he drew it and then paid someone else to build it, Xander laughed. He couldn't do all the practical stuff as well as you can. Anyway, you should come. I'd really like it. Yeah. Well, thanks. I'd really like it too. Good. Xander stood up. If you need help packing up the car at any point, just yell. You're keen. We're not leaving until tomorrow. I know. Xander smiled. I just don't want to miss the flight. New Year's Eve in Brisbane has the edge on here somehow. Nathan caught a glimpse of Ilse passing by her office window. She gave him a little wave. I struggled to believe that. Believe it, Xander said, and Nathan watched the screen door slam behind him. He heard the thud and clip of the cricket ball as he turned back to the girls. Sophie was still fiddling with her chords, and Lo had her head down over her latest artwork. Do you want to have a go on the guitar, Lo? He asked. I'm doing this. Nathan moved over to look at her pictures. They had been laid out across the porch, weighed down with rocks. She had been painting the same scene over and over again, he saw now. Every one was a variation of her dad's painting. You're trying to paint the grave, he said. I can't get it right. They look pretty good to me. Lo threw him a look that implied his artistic opinion was of questionable value, but Nathan could tell she was pleased. He wasn't making it up either. The images were all imitations of Cameron's theme and were unavoidably childish, but they were strangely expressive. Where Cameron had been heavy-handed with the shadow, she had managed to capture corners of light. Are you missing your dad? He said. And Lo exchanged a glance with her sister. Do you think Daddy was scared out there at the grave by himself? Lo said, finally. No, Nathan lied. He thought for a minute. He liked being out on the property. More truthful. But I think he found some things in his life very hard. The girls mulled that over. I don't like the Stockman's grave, Sophie said eventually. It's scary. Nathan shook his head. It doesn't have to be. There are a lot of stupid stories about the Stockman. None of them are true. How do you know? I went to the State Library once and looked it up. He'd spent a few hours there years ago in Brisbane when Xander was still young and Nathan had found it particularly hard to pass him back into Jackie's arms. It had been a difficult handover and Nathan had missed the flight home. Adrift, he'd found himself walking the city streets until he'd ended up outside the library.